Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You know, me and my wife, I mean, you know, I think it's a dream come true to kind of, we all play this game for, like, we dream of playing this game as kids. And, you know, to be able to be here on the South Side for the next 5 to 7 years, I mean, the stability, the financial security, man, it's an unbelievable feeling. And, you know, me and my wife, like, we can't thank the White Sox enough. We can't thank Jerry, Kenny, Jeremy, Chris Getz, like, all those guys. I mean, they've taken care of us, and, you know, we hope to repay the favor.
That's the voice of Aaron Bummer, White Sox left-handed reliever who is now a rich man. Certainly in terms of real-life money, $16 million is quite a bit of it. In terms of baseball money, though, it's quite an economical deal and quite a good one for both Bummer and the White Sox. Let's go out now to the Al Pamani Ford hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park, and we will bring in Jim Margulis into the program. He is, of course, available on Twitter, always, at Sox Machine. He is the editor-in-chief, is that fair to say, of Sox Machine? Jim, can I say that?
Yeah, that works. Owner, editor-in-chief, czar. I like czar.
The czar, yes. You are the czar of Sox Machine, and thank you very much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it. I assume you're also the one, knowing your... the way that you work in puns, were you the one that sculpted the bum dog millionaire on the as the headline of the Aaron Bummer extension?
Yeah, it's a movie I haven't seen, so it's I'm going out on a little bit of a limb, but yeah, it's a headline that came to mind yesterday, and I just hoped that nobody would use it before I had a chance to get to it. I figured it wasn't worth rushing out an article. It wasn't that good of a headline. It's kind of a bad one. So, yeah, it's my work for better or for worse.
It's bad in a good way, though, and that's why I appreciate it. The best puns are always bit bad. So, but let's talk about the player himself, Aaron Bummer, who really was a huge part of the White Sox bullpen last season. Arguably the most important player there. He wasn't usually the one locking down games. That was Colum A. But I asked Josh Nelson about this a couple of weeks ago as well, just on the bullpen as a whole. I like Bummer. You think you're going to be able to rely on him. Colum A, while analytically in the second half, did tail off a little bit from where he was in the first half. Top to bottom, though, would you call this a good bullpen going into 2020 in a year where things are supposed to be all, you know, on the level? They're supposed to be in contention for the division. Do you think that this bullpen is good enough where we sit right now?
I would say it's fine. It doesn't have the kind of high upside, or at least the history of, you know, tons of strikeouts and you know, low ERAs like the Yankees and other super bullpens have built. It has the ability to be good. You know, there's a spectrum to where they can overachieve, and some guys can get those strikeouts, and if somebody like Ian Hamilton or Tyler Johnson comes in and provides the strikeouts from AAA like they've been hoping, then there's a bit of growth that you know, we may not be accounting for right now. But they did have a very lucky bullpen year last year where they really didn't blow a ninth inning lead until the very last month of the season. I think the last 2 weeks of the season, they almost went perfect in that regard, and they were, you know, very good with eighth inning leads too, and they were, you know, so good to the point where you can't expect them to ever be that good again. Even teams with great bullpens usually don't have that kind of luck. They were great at converting their leads into wins, and you really can't expect that going into any season. So I think, you know, if they revert to that normal kind of luck to where they blow 4 or 5 ninth inning leads in the season, it might feel like the bullpen is worse than it is, just because we're not accustomed to watching them blow saves because they really didn't last year.
What do you think of Steve Cishek signing here on the other side of town now? Of course, he was used a ton during his tenure with the Cubs. Joe Maddon really leaned on him heavily. Do you feel like this was a good addition to the pen? Do you think his best days maybe are behind him? But, you know, do you want to see him in high leverage situations? Really, how do you break down the Sox bringing in Cshek?
I thought it was good, you know, given the context. I don't think it was a great reliever market this year, and the best relievers were jumped on immediately. So if the White Sox are trying to, you know, calibrate how it, you know, how relievers fit into other potential big signings, then maybe they didn't really get a chance to explore that. But among guys who were left, Cshek is he's good. As you mentioned, he was overused with the Cubs. He tended to start years strong and then end years kind of slumping, and that's partially because he was used like, you know, more than half the games, I think, over August and September, at least until the Cubs were out of it. So I think if Rick Renteria really doesn't overuse relievers, he's pretty good at that. Even Aaron Bummer last year had some stretches where he leaned on Bummer a lot, but then he pulled back. You know, he's able to give him a few days off in a row, or, you know, save him for a one batter outing to give him a lighter week after a heavier week. So I think he has a good idea of, you know, I guess the amount of gas guys have in the tank. So there's that. But I think of Cshek right now, I'm thinking of him as somebody who provides a little insurance against, like, Evan Marshall having a little bit of regression after his good year. Because Marshall, you know, he had great success and was certainly surprised. But when you look at his arsenal, you think that's something where he's a little bit off command. Mm-hmm. Or if he loses a mile or two per hour on his fastball, his power, you know, a splitter, that maybe, you know, he's going to be somebody who looks ordinary or worse in a year. And so Cshek comes in, and he's maybe not like an eighth or ninth inning guy, but fine in the seventh inning, especially against righties.
One more question about the bullpen here before we move on to other things. You mentioned Marshall, and clearly Bummer was a standout last year. They both kind of came out of nowhere to varying degrees. Who do you think is one guy in the bullpen going into 2020 that not a lot of people are talking about that could make a similar leap to what we saw from Bummer last year?
Well, I've always liked Tyler Johnson, and I liked him, you know, last year when he had only pitched an A-ball and had a few levels to climb to get to Chicago. I thought he would be there just because of his history of, you know, being a college closer whose success translated to the majors, fastball, slider, you know, really competitive on the mound presence. So he looks like he belongs there, and I thought that, you know, given another year, he would have ascended smoothly and to at least some, you know, maybe mid-leverage roles in 2019. But then he had the lat injury in spring training, really, you know, threw him off for basically the entire season. Came back and had a decent, you know, August. But when it comes to the work he was trying to do to take some pressure off his lat and make his delivery more about his legs than his arm, you know, he had a little bit of work to do and a little bit more work remaining than maybe anybody thought, you know, given the setback he had. But I still like the stuff. I still like the, you know, his ability to, you know, have two different pitches and rely on the slider heavily the way other guys can't. So he's somebody, I think, of that bunch of relievers like Zach Birdie and Ian Hamilton who are have been touted for years as being potential plus additions. I think he's got the best shot at it.
My name is Kevin Zipak here on 670 The Score this morning. We are talking to Jim Margulis, the czar of Sox Machine, self-professed.
Yeah, I like that.
Let's move into the starting rotation here now. I think this is going to be, personally for me, I think this is going to be what makes or breaks team. It's not exactly a controversial opinion. You could say that about starting rotation on many staffs or, around baseball. But I think for the Sox in particular, there are more unknowns for various reasons, you know, and health and innings limits and guys coming back from injury and so many different variables that are going into this thing. I think it could be either a great rotation or it could be a really disappointing one. I don't know if there's a lot of room in between. Overall, where do you stand right now on this thing? Not only 1 through 5, but on, you know, you go a little bit deeper with some of the other options. Where are you with the Sox rotation as we sit here?
I think it's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of volatility there, and I'm a fan of the guys they have in place. Like, the guys who are in place right now are the guys who need to be in place, and they need to either have, you know, immediate success that makes them a 90-win team, or they need to battle through whatever struggles they're going to have, but the guys are the guys. The depth is the bigger issue. Right now, they're really going to be struggling for, I guess they have a sixth starter because Michael Kopech is there, but after him, it's pretty murky. And if, say, they have a spring training flare-up or so, or I think ideally Kopech, you know, gets a few starts in AAA just to get back into the every five-day grind and not make everything seem so important when he's rehabbing from major surgery. And, you know, it's right now the five guys that they have, you know, it's you know, they're all worth starting. And so Kopech being the sixth starter is a great situation. Problem is, if any of those guys get injured and Kopech's in immediately, or if you're looking for an alternate aside from Kopech, you know, there really isn't an obvious one. So if they have some kind of crisis early to where they need a seventh starter, then they're not really well prepared for it as we see it now. And, you know, we've seen that situation in previous years where they called on Dylan Covey and Ross Detweiler, and Covey is gone, but Detweiler is still around. And it doesn't seem like those guys or that tier, that kind of starter is completely out of it. And I think when they're completely healthy rotation in terms of both, I guess, the guys they have and the guys who are waiting in the wings, then you really won't have to worry about those independent ball starters ever making a start for the White Sox in the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think if we have to see Ross Detweiler start a game again, things have gone horribly wrong. So we're going to try to avoid that by all means. I'm not worried about Lucas Giolito. I know some people are, you know, I can't understand why. It looked like last year he really did figure everything out, and he seems to be somebody that they can rely on in that rotation. But I've seen a lot of divided opinion on Dallas Keuchel. Some people are going super optimistic about, you know, this is our John Lester. He's going to be the new Mark Burley, you know, comparing to all these other great left-handed pitchers. I don't know if I want to go that far. And then on the other end, you have guys saying, you know, there's a reason he wasn't signed last year. He wasn't that great for Atlanta. And you get him out of Houston and things are going to fall apart with him. I like the signing, and I'm somewhere in between those two opinions. What are your expectations for Keuchel this year, not only on the field, but I guess as a, you know, a veteran and somebody to bring some of these younger players around in the clubhouse as well?
Well, I think if you're thinking about Mark Burley, it's late career Mark Burley.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, he's not going to finish for Cy Young's, but he's going to, you know, throw 200 innings or challenge 200 innings and provide some mentorship. I think the difference between him and an Ivan Nova, who comes in for a year just to take up starts and provide innings and flip the calendar over another year.
He certainly started a lot of games.
Yeah, and he was, you know, fine. You know, did his job to a lesser degree, but just he's not really counted on to be a fixture. I think Keuchel is there to be a fixture, not only in innings, but in terms of leadership and kind of helping be an extension of the coaching staff and be somebody who provides a message where maybe it doesn't sound great coming from a coach. Maybe it feels like coming down or doghousing coming from a coach, but coming from a veteran, it's more like, this guy knows what he's doing, and I'm clearly not doing that. That's great. That's, I think, where he comes in play. He's not really I think right now he's the number two starter, but ideally as Kopech and Cease and maybe Reynaldo Lopez too come up, he's shifted down to be a number three, number four type, you know, by the end of maybe, or I would say by the middle of his second season. And I think that's a fair way to put it. I think when, his struggles finding a team on the free agent market a couple of years ago was more, I think, him not being an overpowering pitcher and being somebody subject to regression and just the market being dead and having so many rebuilding teams that didn't, you know, quote unquote, need him. This year, you know, being the market is what it was, more active, more teams involved, and only being a few stragglers at the end of the year, I think it's more normal. And I'm curious to see what Keuchel looks like when he has a normal preseason, normal offseason, knowing where he's going to sign, knowing who he's working with, having the full spring training to get ready, all that kind of stuff. I think that he performed well enough with Atlanta, given the weird start to the season he had. I think that's more encouraging than discouraging, even if some of his numbers weren't as strong as in the past.
Few more minutes here this morning with Jim Margulis. You can follow him at Sox Machine, and I do suggest that you do that. It's his one of the best conduits for White Sox content out there right now. Simple question here, turning more to the offense now. Who should be the leadoff man for this team? Because I've heard pretty much everyone mentioned for the most part, from, you know, Garcia to Luis Robert to Yasmani Grandal. I mean, pretty much everybody's name has been thrown out there. But if you're putting the lineup out there on opening day, who would be your leadoff man?
Well, I was for Moncada and just shoving every good hitter to the top of the lineup and letting things settle. But Moncada said he didn't really care for it. That his experience didn't really work that well, and he's comfortable hitting second. And given the season and given how trivial lineup construction really is in the big picture, as long as you have some semblance of correctness, it's not worth pushing a guy out of his comfort zone. So I think, you know, when you have the guys they have and not having a whole lot of patience in the lineup, I think it's Tim Anderson's fine against lefties. Not great, but fine against lefties. And then, you know, Leury, for all his, all the reasons
utility,
he's not a traditional leadoff man, he at least he has an understanding of how to make things happen up there. Scored 93 runs, which is pretty good given the playing time he got. You know, runs the base as well. So he's got that going for him until I think Nick Madrigal comes up and gets settled. I think right now, given his contact ability, that he does draw some walks, I think he'll struggle to draw walks early until he scares pitchers. But I think he's somebody who can post a 330 on base percentage early, and that's not great. But given the other options and given the amount of, you know, what should be thunder in the middle of the order, you just need to have an average person up at the top in order to be an effective lineup. So I think he's my ultimate long-range plan for at least this year.
When do you think we'll see Madrigal up in the bigs?
I would like it to be opening day, but right now I think the White Sox are dragging their feet a little bit and maybe trying to get the Eloy deal. But they also have a reason to play Danny Mendick, although we're hearing Leary more, and so I think that is really more about a leverage play. But I think I would like to see him opening day, probably. And I should say, like, you know, before I'd say, like, oh, you won't see him till May. But given how they've gotten stuff done and how they signed Robert for way more than I thought they would, given his you know, his weaknesses in his game and given his track record when it comes to missing time with injuries, I didn't think they would pay more than they paid Eloy. So given that they have gone the distance to get these guys involved in opening days the past 2 years, can't count it out. And maybe it is the new normal. It's just taking a bit longer than it took Robert.
All right, last question here for you, Jim. I think the offense will be good, and we talked about the pitching staff, how it could potentially be very good if all the things break well. Bullpen looks solid. I'm still a little bit, I don't want to say skeptical, but maybe a little nervous about the defense and the infield defense in particular. Actually, hell, the outfield defense in particular. You can't rule that out either with Eloy and Nomar Mazara in the corners. But defensively, do you think this team will be up to snuff for a team that expects to be in contention? And as an aside, who is the best defensive player on this team?
I think the outfield is a bigger concern than the infield. I think once Madrigal is up, maybe he's not as good as Yolmer Sanchez right away, but watching him play in the minors and just seeing, yeah, I guess when you're that small, you have to learn how to use your body and how to, I guess, overcome lack of arm strength, lack of power, and so forth. And his actions around second base are so quick. Like when he's ranging away from a first base or if he's on the other side of second, he can get rid of the ball and somehow contort his body to get enough on the throw to get those out. So I think when you give him a little bit of time to get acclimated to the speed of the game and just, you know, it affects some guys more than others. Maybe he'll come up to me great right away. He seems to have the confidence for it. But I think once he's settled, he'll be the best defender on the team with maybe Luis Robert second, just because his speed is insane. And once he learns, you know, the speed of the game and the angles of the park and everything like that, he could be in that grade as well. But I think early on, you know, given Robert learning some of the outfields and so forth, and maybe having to contend with obstacles in the outfield with having relatively immobile outfielders with Eloy in left and Mazara in right, I kind of worry for his health there in terms of running into guys, running into walls, that sort of thing. That's the bigger concern right now. And I think Anderson, for his struggles, I think he kind of washes out to average because he does make some plays others don't have. And maybe he can get his footwork and mechanics under control to where he doesn't miss so many makeable plays. But I think the infield will shape up to be average to above average. The outfield is really the concern. And yeah, I think when you look at the parts, there is a, you know, winning team here. And I think, you know, that they project above 500 is important because even in like the Samardzija years and the Melky Robertson, you know, that those winning the winter years, they never projected over 500. So I think they have the mathematical base to where the performances say, yeah, you should expect them to win 83 or more games. It's just a matter of, you know, having some guys being on the older side and the White Sox having a terrible record in free agency to where you kind of have to expect the sum to not match the parts, at least until they show that the evaluation and health and everything like that is all on the same page.
Jim, thank you very much for getting up early this morning and hopping on the program. Really appreciate your insight as always.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you very much. That is Jim Margulis. You can figure out how to check him out on Twitter. You just go to @SoxMachine and you find Jim. You can find the link to the website as well. And I'm not just blowing smoke. I visit Sox Machine often between Jim and Josh Nelson and some of the other contributors there. It really is a great resource for any White Sox fan. Then they delve beneath the surface layer more than a lot of places. My name is Kevin Zipak. I am here until 9 o'clock, and that's when I was told Nick Shepkowski and Big Anthony Heron will be here. I haven't seen them trudging around quite yet, but I'm sure they're here somewhere. Are they here?
I haven't seen him, but what do you think a small Anthony Heron would look like?
Well, he's got a son, I think, so that's probably what a small Heron would look like. I don't think his kid's name is Anthony, but that's a small Heron. That's what that would look like. But our Anthony Heron here is rather large, and that's why he is Big Ant Heron. He'll be here at 9 with Shep, but until then, you've got me, and I've reopened these phone lines. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Want to continue a little bit more White Sox talk coming up next, and I'd love for you to join in on the conversation. Also, throughout the first hour of the show, talked a lot of Cubs, talked about the launch of the Marquee Network. If you were able to watch it yesterday, or if you were unable to watch it yesterday, I'm really interested to hear in people's experience for this maiden voyage of the new Cubs television network. And you can check in. I'd love you to at 312-644-6767. You can send a text message, as always, at 67011. And you can tweet me as well at Kevbo_. I'm here until 9. My name's Kevin Zipak. You've got 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back on in. It's 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. My name is Kevin Zipak. Hanging out here until 9 o'clock. Then Nick Shepkowski and Big Anthony Heron will be here, and I'm sure they've got thoughts on things. I know that I saw on Twitter Shep was promoting the show. He said that Anthony wanted to defend Rob Manfred, which I think would be a difficult task at this point. So if that doesn't draw you in to see how Anthony does mental gymnastics to try to defend Rob Manfred, the scourge of the baseball world at the moment, boy, that's about as good of an advertisement for their program as you could get. Phone number here is 312-644-6767. 67011 is how you send in a text message. 708 texter says, you said you were talking White Sox at 8. It's 8:27. You missed it. I didn't miss it. I was here. We have been talking White Sox for actually like over a half hour. I started at the end of last hour. I've been talking White Sox for quite some time, so I don't know if you missed it, but I didn't miss any of it. And we're going to continue to talk White Sox. I want to get to a couple of callers we have on hold here that would also like to talk about the Chicago White Sox. And of course, you can join in at 312-644-6767. We'll get to George shortly, but first let's check in with our guy Ron on the South Side. Good morning, Ron. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Kevin. Couple of things. You were talking to your guest about infield defense. And I just don't see why, the second baseman shouldn't be brought up.
Madrigal.
If I was talking to Bruce yesterday, he said that really is his strength. I think a whole month would make a difference. I think he needs to get acclimated and playing in the major leagues and also playing with Tim Anderson. I think about his defense more than I think the offense. I'm like, yes, boy, I was really looking forward to the game. I know Renato Lopez was going to be on the mound. So that's my question. Is Renato Lopez going to be the fifth starter? I know at the beginning of the season, the fifth starter would not be needed for some games. But I think that we really need to see, where Renato Lopez is as much as we can. So those are my two things. So, yeah, who's penciled in for the number five spot? Okay. Have a good one, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Ron. Appreciate you checking in as always. I know you're always going to be involved when there's White Sox chatter, and you always like to get in on the conversation. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. In terms of Nick Madrigal, I agree with you. I agree with what Jim Margulis was saying at the top of the hour when we talked to him as well. I think most White Sox fans, you could probably, and Sean, you're a White Sox fan as well, I think you'd probably agree with this. We'd all love to see Nick Madrigal starting on opening day at second base, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's really a argument to have against it besides, you know, service time.
Sure, because it's not like they do have another, you know, obvious option there at second base. We're talking about, you know, Danny Mendick or Leroy Garcia, you know, and a guy like Mendick who cup of coffee, I should say. See, I haven't had coffee. That's why I'm having trouble speaking so far this morning. In a small sample size last year, Mendick was fine. And he talked earlier this spring about wanting to be more of a versatile player defensively and bring more things to the table because that's going to help his case trying to make this 26-man roster. And yes, the rosters are now 26 players. I still think it should be more, but that's another topic for another time. So Danny Mendick is one option there. Leury Garcia, who was extended by the organization over the weekend as well, is an option at second base. He can play pretty much anywhere you need him to. You know, barring first base and catcher, and he could probably play a little bit of first base. He's just kind of a smaller guy, like a bigger target. But, you know, he's Mr. Utility, and I like him more in that utility role, a bench guy, you know, a pinch runner, a defensive replacement late in the game, somebody that can play maybe once a week, not necessarily leading off, which is where a lot of people I've heard from want to see Leury Garcia. But there's not like one glaring option right there that is kind of staring you in the face. And so you turn to Madrigal, who has not really faced too much pushback in the minor leagues. His numbers have all been really solid throughout all of his stops throughout the minor league organization. He was a top five draft pick. Was he fourth overall? I mean, he was a touted by pretty much everybody as the best college hitter coming out that year out of Oregon State. So he's got the pedigree. He's got the success in the minors. It really just is a matter of service time, I think. You know, it's always going to be an issue, even with a player like Madrigal, who you wouldn't think would project out to, you know, breaking the bank with a contract when his time is eventually up, and contractually, I should say, not his time on Earth. But when they do need to re-sign him, you know, he probably won't be getting that Eloy Jimenez or Louis Robert big monster contract. So I don't know why you don't bring up Nick Madrigal. If he plays well in spring training, there's no reason that I think that he shouldn't be starting on opening day at second base. In terms of Ronaldo Lopez, I think he's definitely penciled in this rotation. He has been very, very inconsistent over the past couple of years. I think anybody that's watched White Sox baseball would easily be able to tell that. But one thing you can say about him is he's been very reliable and consistent, and he stayed off the injured list. 33 starts last year, 32 starts in 2018. Again, inconsistency you're always going to get from young pitchers, and you're hoping that this year it does click for him. I'm a little bit more bearish on Ronaldo Lopez maybe than some are. I think he may be better suited to a bullpen role down the line, as he's really at this point, and one of the reasons for his inconsistency is that he has kind of been a one-pitch pitcher. He's able to get the fastball over, but struggles with command of his breaking stuff and his changeup. And that's the reason you've seen him struggle so much. At this point in time, they do need him to start. They need him to start those 30 games a year and be able to go every fifth day. And they have been able to rely on him for that. But I'm thinking as this thing kind of moves along, not only this year, but also in 2021 and so forth, maybe you do move Lopez to a different role at some point, unless he just proves me wrong and busts out this year and becomes an above-average pitching option, which, of course, would be the best-case scenario. 312-644-6767. Let's check in River Grove, where we will find George. Good morning, George. What's up?
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
Well, I've got a couple observations here. Number one, regardless of the endeavor, the reality rarely, 9 times out of 10, will not exceed the expectations. And what I see here is a team last year that was making the same moronic mistakes the last week of the season that they were making the first week of the season.
Like what?
Strutting out of the box, and realizing the ball ain't going over the fence, and then getting thrown out at second base. You know, when you have players that think that they're posing for the TV cameras at any given moment rather than playing baseball to the best of their ability, you know, and that goes to the manager. The manager's expectations are not what they should be. I didn't see intensity. I didn't see focus. I didn't see discipline last year. And when you have a team that's a bunch of losers and all of a sudden you get some players that you think are going to help you and then you're going to flip the switch and become winners overnight, it rarely happens that way. And I don't understand why they got rid of Yomer Sanchez. He's a rock-solid utility player. And down the road, they're going to need somebody like that, you know. He's got a lot of experience, and he improved at the plate, too, as the season went on. He was a good, smart player. He was overmatched as frequently as anyone else, but, you know, he played well. But I don't see the manager who's in control of this team. His main job should be to get the best play possible out of every player, and I didn't see that happen last year. You know, and now you've got even better players, so that's going to change. I don't see it. I'd like to see it. But I don't see it happening the way everyone anticipates it'll happen. You know, there's going to be a lot of stumbling around.
Okay, I got you. Thank you very much, George. I appreciate it. And thank you to the 30,000 people in the background of your call as well for coming on.
Was he calling from church?
Coming on the program. I don't know. It seemed like he was in some sort of a mess hall or a cafeteria or maybe a church. I don't know. But thank you to George for checking in this morning. I disagree with so many of the things that you said there, and I'll just start with one. Yomer Sanchez last year was a terrible hitter. Period. End of. I mean, he got on base at a .318 clip, which is below average. .321 slugging, which is well below average. I mean, that is dirt poor if we're talking about a major league hitter, even a slap-hitting middle infielder like Yomer. He was very good defensively. I'm not going to question that, but you know, for being so one-dimensional, the fact they didn't bring him back is because via arbitration, he would have been due to make $6 million this year. And you don't pay $6 million to a light-hitting utility infielder. That's just bad economics. And they already have Leury Garcia, who can fill that utility role. They have one of their top prospects in Nick Madrigal, you know, waiting in the wings to take that position in second base. So that's why they didn't re-sign Yomer Sanchez. That's pretty cut and dried. In regard to your thoughts on the manager and, you know, keeping these guys in line, or I don't even know how you phrased it, you know, it's 2020. I don't think that baseball clubhouses should be run like the military or anything like that. You don't want to, you know, be a drill sergeant. You want to let these guys be loose and be themselves and have fun. It's more about kind of fostering a culture and you know, a harmonious environment more than it is, you know, having them run sprints and having them, you know, dart out of the box at 100 miles an hour on every single fly ball hit in the air. It's okay to admire your home runs, you know. I don't want to get into this, 1950s debate about, you know, hustle and, you know, back in my day and all of that stuff. It's supposed to be entertaining. It's a game. It's supposed to be fun. Are there going to be mental errors along the way? Yeah, of course. The White Sox will have them. The Cubs will have them. Every team in Major League Baseball will have their share of those. And you can't condemn the manager, whether it's Joe Maddon, Ricky Renteria, or David Ross, or whomever, because a guy decides to do something boneheaded. It's going to happen along the way. You can't avoid that. But if you are scoring enough runs, if you are preventing enough runs, and you're winning enough ball games, and you're making plays consistently enough, that's going to be able to paper over some of the other errors. Nobody's going to be perfect. I know the Yankees are really good, and they might be close to perfect, but and the Dodgers are pretty damn good as well. Outside of that, though, there's going to be a lot of errors everywhere, and you're just going to have to get over it, and if you don't like it, then change the station. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves host the Rockford Ice Hogs at 3 p.m. today. The first 2,500 fans receive a Wolves Retro Lunchbox, courtesy of ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. My name is Kevin Zipak. I am here until 9 o'clock. That is about, 19 more minutes you've got of me. I do want to get into a tiny little bit of Bulls stuff coming up next, but also want to continue to take your calls on the White Sox and the Cubs this morning, as the Cubs started their spring training schedule Yesterday, they beat the Oakland Athletics in spring training play. The Marquee Network debuted yesterday. I know a lot of people have had thoughts on that for better or for worse. I'm actually surprised this morning that we've had more positive feedback on the Marquee Network from some of the callers and texters this morning. I was expecting it to go in the other direction entirely, but so far so good. I guess if you were able to see it. Speaking of mental errors, it's the second time today you're hitting me with this, Sean.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Taking your calls on the Cubs and the White Sox. Also want to talk a little bit of Bulls briefly coming up next. I'm Kevin Zipak on 670 The Score.
My question is more about the mood of the team as opposed to the game tonight. Zach has been caught on camera twice now expressing some frustration at your late game timeouts when the game is seemingly over. Is it worth the risk to continue to do that in a season that's been filled? 8 straight losses, you guys haven't played up to standards, all these injuries. Is it worth continuing to do that if it seems like it's now agitating your own guys?
He hasn't said a word to me about it agitating him. I don't know if you're reading his mind on that or you're just making that assumption that that's what he's upset about. He hasn't said a word to me about it. So he's very respectful about me coaching the team and me trying to help the team. So you have to ask him.
If it is agitating, guys, do you feel like it's worth it to continue to do it?
I think it is agitating, guys. Yeah. You'll have to ask him. Yeah, I'm sure you will. Yeah. JoJo, anything?
No.
Jim, you've been very consistent with your explanation of the late-game timeouts you've taken, talking about coaching to the very end of the game. What specifically were you trying to accomplish with that one you called with 30 seconds left?
We were just trying to get a three, execute something we've been working on, an action that we've been working on. And I thought their pressure on our inbounds hurt us. I think it hurt us all night. Their length and athleticism on the side out of bounds hurt us. And we had a hard time getting the ball into action. So we turned it over in the first half, too, on the side out of bounds after timeout. So.
That is the voice of Bulls head coach Jim Boylan. My name is Kevin Zipak here on 670 The Score this morning, just for a few more minutes here. And I do want to get back out to the phone lines here and talk more baseball with you folks, because that's kind of what I enjoy doing the most. But I had to address the Bulls game from last night. They were beaten by the Phoenix Suns by a score of 112-104. That is 8 losses in a row now for the Bulls. And there was another Boylan boneheaded blunder at the end of that game where he called a timeout down 10 with about 30 seconds left in the game. And you could see visually, I'm not a great lip reader, but you could see Zach LaVine saying something that I'm not allowed to say on the air here. But, you know, there was an expletive involved. He couldn't really wrap his mind around the fact that a timeout was being called at that point. And it's happened so many times this year now that we're just kind of, I hope we're not becoming numb to Jim Boylan and his clownery at the end of games, because this is so embarrassing. And around All-Star Weekend, when the national basketball media was all congregating here in Chicago, and we had plenty of guests on all of the day part shows throughout the week, national guys, you know, out of town people with a different perspective, a little bit farther away from this Bulls thing. And not one of them really had a nice thing to say about Jim Boylan. And I know you can't condemn a head coach strictly on what fans think or on what the media thinks or any sort of prognosticator or pundit or anything like that. You can't really base it all on one's sole opinion. But when everybody agrees and when everybody on the outside is shaking their head and just baffled and befuddled by these decisions that the head coach is making, something has got to give at some point. And you can't just look at the head coach. You have to look at who hired him as well. You know, John Paxson's been in his job for about 17 years now with almost nothing to show for it. And just seeing how far this organization has fallen in these 17 years outside of a small tenure of glory about a decade ago when Derrick Rose was on another planet. Outside of that, John Paxson has really done nothing to deserve his position right now. And it's really, it seems like there's no end in sight. They're going to be picking once again in the lottery, sixth or seventh, kind of the same place that they've been. Not quite bad enough to get a top player in the draft, and certainly not good enough to make the playoffs. Zach LaVine, while he has been a bright spot at certain times, most of the season, in fact, Zach's having a really good year. I don't want to denigrate him at all, but he is so frustrated. And not only this season, which has already been lost, but, you know, his contract is going to be up in a couple of years, and he's only 24 years old. He's a player that you'd like to hold on to. You'd like to re-sign him. What incentive has this organization given Zach LaVine to re-sign here in a couple of years when his deal is up? The only reason that they were able to get a borderline all-star guy in the first place like Zach is because they traded for him. They're not attracting any free agents. They haven't signed a free agent worth a damn in years. And they're headed in the wrong direction. They have not yet hit rock bottom. Whenever you think the Bulls have hit rock bottom, Jim Boylan calls another timeout. And he says, no, wait, there's another level deeper we can go. I can embarrass this franchise even more than I already have. So those are my Bulls thoughts. I just had to get those out this morning. That felt really good. It felt cathartic to be able to do so. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. I got to get out of here in a couple minutes, but I do want to take a couple more calls. Before I do so, let's check in with Otto. He's in Brookfield, wants to talk about the Cubs broadcast from yesterday. Good morning, Otto. What's up?
Morning, Ted. Well, hey, I'm a Cubs fan here, and I just cannot – I'm very frustrated with Tom Ricketts beyond the not improving the team at all, letting Castellanos go. I am, if I can say the word name of the company, I am a DirecTV subscription holder. Part of my subscription is the Marquee Network. I've called now three times. I called early in the week to make sure it was ready to go. I called yesterday morning to make sure it was ready to go, and I called at game time, and even this morning I still do not have the Marquee Network. They do not know what the problem is, as in DirecTV told me they're not sure if it's the Cubs' end of it or if it's DirecTV's end of it. I'm supposed to get an email saying when it's back online. It's not. And I was also told after asking questions that this has happened to a number of DirecTV customers, that they're supposed to have the channel and they don't. And I would suggest to those people asking for compensation, they'll take however many days you're without the Marquee Network, and they'll give you a discount. They'll take that off your bill. So just a public service announcement for any of your fellow angry listeners. it's a real low. In my opinion, Tom Ricketts is down in the 40 percentile approval rating, in my opinion. I really hated how he answered that question about re-signing both Bryant and Baez by basically throwing it over to Epstein when he's the guy signing the damn checks and he's also the guy collecting all the money. But also, I just wanted to get your opinion. How many games do you think the Sox will win this year?
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much for checking Otto in Brookfield. Running out of time, I'll just give you a short answer on the Sox. I think they'll win 84 games this year. I don't think they're going to win the division. I think there's going to be a lot of fun times and a lot of progress from a lot of young players. I just think that this is year one of what should be a nice sustained run. So I don't want anybody to get too bent out of shape if the Sox don't win 100 games here in 2020. This segment was brought to you by Illini Care Health. You deserve quality health care. Choose Illini Care Health for health care coverage that includes free gym memberships, after-school care, and school uniforms that either you or your family can take advantage of. Visit IlliniCare.com today. Illini Care Health is a Health Choice Illinois plan. I got to get out of here. Shep and Anthony Heron are up next. Thank you to everybody who called, texted, tweeted, and listened. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you were here with me, and I appreciate that. Thank you to Jim Margulis of Sox Machine. Thank you to Sean Anderson, even though he messed up on the board a couple of times. Thank you for the thumbs up there. I'm back, I think, at 9 next week. I think it's Kebbo and Herb Lawrence from 9 to noon next week. So I get to sleep in for a little bit. Until then, enjoy your Sunday. Shep and Anthony Heron are up next here on 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.